Matt or Rob or Kat. I'm Joshua. Good morning. I did wear my coolest pair of tennis shoes, just trying to keep up, because I know that's kind of a thing, particularly. Well, Kat, usually you're wearing heels, but Matt and Rob kind of have their tennis shoe game going on. So trying to keep up with that. I'm not going to enter into this fray about music and eras. I have my own very strong opinions. We're just not going to go there. All right. This morning, what we are going to do is we're going to continue digging into the Gospel of Mark. And today we're going to take a look at a story that is probably familiar to some of you. It's the feeding of the 5,000 in Mark chapter 6. And actually, as kind of a disclaimer here, I am actually revisiting a message that I shared with one church about 6 years ago. And so I thought, how should I recycle this? And then I was like, you know what? There's maybe only a few people who are actually here at that during that sermon. And B, it would just be like a preacher's vanity to assume that anybody actually remembers anything somebody said in a sermon even last week. I mean, Matt's sermons, of course, you remember everything that he says. Well, he's not here, so you don't have to butter. You don't have to sack up to him, so don't worry about it. So we're going to revisit this, because at that time, we were working through this series on resilience, and we took a look at the topic of resourcefulness from the context of this miracle in Mark 6. And as we have been now in these weeks working through this series on Mark, and as these very recent weeks have unfolded for us with our upcoming move to Lyndhurst and doing some fundraising and really just seeing the momentum and even the challenges in this next step for our church, when I was looking back and I came across these notes from this sermon in the past, it just seemed like the time was right for us to take a look at this again. So we're going to take these verses bit by bit, and we're going to reflect on what we see in the interaction between Jesus and his disciples and their response to that. And I want to keep in mind, as we're looking through this section, several themes or big elements that are part of and throughout Mark's gospel that I really think are overlapping in a lot of ways right here in this particular account of the feeding of the 5,000. There are lots of miracles happening. So as we're going through the book of Mark, a lot of miracles happening. We've touched on some of those already in this series. There's a lot more miracles to come. And so this encounter, this story, this happening is just right squarely in this stream of miracles that are happening throughout the Gospel of Mark. And then with that, Jesus is proclaiming and revealing his kingdom all along the way, often through these miracles. These miracles are a part of that revelation. They're not just like a side story. They're actually part of how he's revealing, a lot of ways surprising and even reshaping people's understanding or their expectation of what that kingdom was to be. Particularly this theme of Jesus as the servant king is going to be a pretty big part of like the latter half of the Gospel of Mark and what has happened thus far. And I think really this story, even in particular, is part of that foundation of Jesus as that servant king, kind of that upside down idea of what people might have been expecting. And then, again, another theme and with all of this is that Jesus is teaching and training his disciples in all that he's doing and all that he's saying. So all of those things, I think, come together, and we see those themes playing out in this story. So when we come into Mark chapter 6, And when we start into this feeding of the 5,000, this story, what has happened is, as we've seen, Jesus is teaching people, crowds are gathering. Matt preached a couple weeks ago about this crowd gathered so much that these guys had to lower their friend down through the roof in order to get to Jesus. So crowds are gathering, they're following them around. Jesus and his disciples have kind of gone off to another spot, and the crowds still come. They find him, they come, they gather around. And so Jesus, he looks at him, he says, I'm going to keep teaching these people. And so starting verse 35 of Mark chapter 6, this is the setting. This is where we're at. This crowd is gathered. And it says, by this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered, you give them something to eat. So the disciples are focused on the problem. They look out, they see the hungry crowd, and really they want to dismiss the issue rather than solve it. And I can kind of get it. Like, I'm a little bit with the disciples here. As a card-carrying introvert, they have come, if you read a few verses before this, Jesus says, let's go to this remote place so you can get some rest. They went to this spot in order to get away and to rest a little bit because of all these crowds. And here are the crowds. So the disciples are like, we're kind of tired. I'm all about the, like, yep, party's over. I love y'all, but it's time for you to go home. I need to decompress. So I'm with them on that. They kind of want to push that aside, and yet Jesus has something going on here. There's something happening, and he says, you give them something to eat. He said, let's not push this aside. Let's see what's happening here. I think it's similar, or I feel this is similar to like when the disciples see the little children coming to Jesus, and they're like, no. This is Jesus. He doesn't have time for this. This is an important guy here. And they dismiss the children, and Jesus is like, whoa, no. Let the children come to me. This is not like, again, this is not a side thing. This is not a distraction. Jesus says, let the children come to me. This is part of what I'm doing. This is part of the story I'm telling. This is part of how Jesus is unpacking his kingdom in a way that kind of surprises people. He tells them, you give them something to eat. He invites them to take some responsibility, to recognize the moment, and to get involved. For such a time as this. Anybody familiar with that phrase? I think we even probably can buy, like, you can probably go to Hobby Lobby and buy like a really pretty sign that you hang on the wall that says, for such a time as this. But that's like a famous line from the story of Esther. And in Esther, Esther is like a young Hebrew girl who has become queen in Persia. So she has gained this place of prominence and favor with King Xerxes in Persia, right at the same time that there's this plot against God's people. This is kind of this post-exile time, and there's these Jews that are living in the land, and so there's this plot against them, and Esther is in this particular spot. She has like the ear of the king, and her cousin Mordecai, he recognizes the time. Now he does throw up his hands. There's a bit of a moment when he does the sackcloth and ashes kinds of things. There's mourning and grieving and wailing, and then he gets up and dusts himself off, and he says, okay, wait a second. I think there's something that can be done here. We don't just hope it passes by. And he goes to Esther, and he says, maybe for such a time as this, you've got an opportunity in this moment to do something. Let's see what God is doing. So he takes that initiative. And then it's Esther's turn to go, okay, am I going to see what's going on in this moment and take the initiative as well. It was no small thing. She took on a great amount of risk to go before the king and to make this request, and yet she did. And then the day was saved for God's people. We often see obstacles as just something that are in the way. So the disciples just are like, okay, hungry people, this is just a distraction from what's important. We often see the obstacles as just in the way, but that might be exactly where the kingdom is happening. It might be where Jesus is doing something. And so this is just a reminder to me, or a caution or an exhortation, to not be in such a hurry to move past a challenge. Don't be in such a hurry that we miss the opportunity to engage. It doesn't mean that everything is our burden. It doesn't mean you just have to go around and find every problem and heap it on your own shoulders. But it is a word for us to recognize, to be in the moment, to recognize those moments, and to take initiative. All right, verse 37 continues on. They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. So disciples immediately are like, "What?" He tells them, "You give them something to eat." And they're like, no, wait. "We don't have that much bread. We don't have that much money. What exactly are you asking of us?" They immediately start to focus on how they don't have enough, how this is impossible, how there's no way that they could provide this. And Jesus says, "What? Wait a second. What do you have?" And so maybe the best first step is not to try to get what we think we need, but to consider what we already have. So this is kind of that quintessential definition of resourcefulness, the idea of working with what you've got, recognizing what you already have at hand and working with that. I like to call this the MacGyver approach. Y'all know MacGyver? Yeah? MacGyver was a superhero. Long before the Avengers, just lit up the box office and took over, we had a different kind of superhero. And his superpower was resourcefulness. MacGyver was the guy who would get in all kinds of like tricky situations, but as long as he could scrounge up like a roll of duct tape and a few paper clips, he could get out of it and save the day. He could defuse a bomb, he could build an airplane out of stuff in the craft cabinet, and he could escape danger and save the day. This was MacGyver, and he was so good at it, like that has, MacGyver has become a verb. Are y'all aware of this? To MacGyver something, it's in the Merriam-Webster. It is. To MacGyver is to make, form, or repair something with what is conveniently on hand. That is the definition of MacGyver as a verb. Dwelling on what we don't have, what the disciples immediately started to do, can be really overwhelming and it can be really defeating. So if we just get caught up as, "I don't have enough, I can't do that, we can't, that can be immediately, it just kind of shuts us down, overwhelming and defeating. But considering what we do have, that can give us a step forward. Luke chapter 16 tells us to be faithful with the little things. Recognize those things that we do have. Be faithful with those. It's not just about worrying over or waiting for all of the things we don't have, but rather being aware of and being faithful with what we do have. So Jesus has told them, "You give them something to eat." They kind of blew up a little bit, and he's like, wait, "What do you have? How many loaves do you have?" And then he tells them, "Go and see." Go and see. That's the next part of verse 38. Jesus doesn't just ask the disciples, but he sends them out among the crowd. So he doesn't just look at them. They don't just turn to one another, the 12, and just turn their pockets inside out and say, well, we don't have anything. He says, go and see. This is fleshed out a little bit more in some of the other accounts of the Gospels, like in John, where when they come back, they say, hey, we found this little boy, and he's got these snacks with him. And so it shows us a little bit. They went out into the crowd. It wasn't just about the food that they could find, but also where they would find it. What they initially saw as the problem, this big hungry crowd of 5,000 plus people, was actually itself the solution. Like, there was an answer there. Community is a resource that can't be overlooked. So if we go back to that idea of working with what we have, one of those things that we have is a community. And so we've got to see that. It's not just when there's a task, when there's something to be done, when we have to see how we take a step forward. It's not just me. It's not just my skills or what I have at hand, my possessions, or just like my bank account. Sometimes we look at that and we go, oh, how can we ever do anything at all? It's us. There's a bigger community at hand. In 1 Corinthians 12, it talks about the parts of the body of Christ. And the biggest impact is when all these parts, different parts, everybody's got different things going on. It's when those things come together as one and are working together. Because our task, what we have ahead of us, is bigger than just you or just me alone. Your part matters, my part matters. We've got to recognize that resource of community. And if you start to just look right here at this community and you start to talk to people in this church, you see actually that there's really quite a wealth of resources. I just think of some of the really neat things that have happened recently. When I just think of, like, what resources do we have here? I just think of last week when we had our All Saints Sunday. And in our small community here, we had enough people who were spiritual directors that y'all were stationed all around the room. And at the same time that we had also a lot of people that had a lot of loss recently and in this last year, and I was one of those folks, we could then lean on our spiritual directors. That's a wealth of a resource right here within this church. I think of, when I think of resourcefulness, I think of about a month ago when we had a Sunday we couldn't meet here, and instead of just going, oh, I guess we can't do anything, before that we thought ahead and we thought we could meet at Wayne and Wendy's. And not only that, but Wayne and Wendy, they've got a swim spa. I don't have a swim spa. They have a swim spa, which is AKA One Church's baptistry.
That's right.
And my household directly benefited from that little bit of resourcefulness because my daughter Nora was baptized on that Sunday. And then we also had a really great, and I feel like pivotal, church meeting right after that, sitting out in your little patio and talking about this move that was ahead of us. So right there, I just look and see what is within us. It's amazing. So we continue to take stock as a community, and we strengthen one another and our ability to step into what God has for us. So verse 38 then continues, and it says, when they found out, so he said, go and see, right? When they found out, they said, 5, that's loaves, and 2 fish. I know I'm breaking up these verses kind of in a funny way, but that's what we're talking about. 5 and 2 fish. The disciples are learning, okay? They follow through with what Jesus told them to do. Go find out what you've got. And even with pretty poor results, I mean, this is not much that they show up with, they still come back to Jesus and show him. They're not making more excuses. They're like, oh, Jesus, we tried and there's nothing here. They brought what was obviously not enough. And I feel like in their posture, maybe I'm reading into this, but I feel like there is a request here. Like they show up with this and they're like, Jesus? There's a little bit of boldness there, right? Okay, here's what we got. Look at all these people. There's a little bit of desperation, maybe a little bit of hope. I think it's kind of like one of my kids. Yeah, those of you like with kids have been around. Like sometimes they ask for something without actually asking, right? So it's like, Dada, this is broken. There's a very specific request there. It's fix it.
Yeah.
And there's like a bit of faith there. Like, Nora thinks I can fix anything. She truly believes, like, oh yeah, Dad, I can fix it. Like, that's pretty lofty, but it makes me feel really good. Like, I feel like there's a lot of confidence there. But that's like a kid, right? And I think even, again, in John chapter 6, where this story is told in the Gospel of John, there's maybe, I feel like it expresses it a little bit more. It says, here's a boy with 5 small barley loaves. These are the disciples bringing this boy and 2 small fish. And then it says, but how far will they go among so many? Jesus? How far could this go among so many? There's like this like nudge, nudge. Okay, I'm asking. I'm coming. This is little. And there's a lesson here. First, I think there's something to be said for this idea of, like, don't be ashamed or reluctant to show up with what you've got, even if it seems, like, little or not enough or pathetic. So there's something like we gotta, let's not be ashamed of what we have. But then, also, it's okay to ask. It's okay to need. There's another story in the Old Testament, kind of a similar circumstance here to the story of Esther, but there's a guy named Nehemiah. And Nehemiah, again, is in this situation. He is a cupbearer to King Artaxerxes. And so he's like a servant for the king, but he gets word that like there's work needed to be done back in Israel. And so he asks. He's the servant of this king who the king really, like, what does it matter to him about rebuilding this city? What does it matter to him about this stuff going on over here? But Nehemiah says, hey, I need to go. So this is a servant asking for, like, a vacation or asking to, like, take some time off. And he says, okay. And he says, could you also like give me some papers so that this will go well for me as I'm passing through the land? Can you kind of smooth things out so people don't mess around? Yeah. And then the king's like, you know what? I'm even going to like send an army with you just to make sure nobody heckles you. Nehemiah just asks. It's a bold request. And he receives. There's kind of a straightforward lesson here. That whole idea of like you never know until you ask. There's a story in this for us with what's coming up. This whole move to Lyndhurst. There was an initial moment where they were kind of like, yeah, I don't think we're really interested in having people. And then Matt just wrote a letter and just asked, hey, I know you guys are thinking this or that, but I just want to ask that you would consider welcoming us to come and to share that space. And then it was like, now they're so excited about us coming. It was this crazy thing where it was just like, at one moment it was like, yeah, maybe not. And then it was like, we're just going to ask. And then it's like, yeah, come on. This will be great. So you never know until you ask. And like Nehemiah, we are servants of the king. Jesus tells us to ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers. He says to knock and the door will be opened. I think it's important for us just to recognize even the simple idea of prayer and recognizing the resource that prayer is. When we serve the God of all creation, let's not hesitate to ask for what we need. So then the story finishes. It says, then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sit down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven. He gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000. And so this is the part of the story I think we focus on the most, right? This miracle that happens. And it's here where God moves. Jesus has been bringing his disciples along through this dialogue. They're learning, they're growing, and then the multiplication happens. And so just a few notes to recognize here about God and how he works. We're in partnership with him. We're working with him, and we're learning through this. But he does some things. And one of those is that God often works through what we have. So we've been challenged to recognize what we have. God often works through what we have. So the disciples bring this little bread and fish. Some think that historically this is really more like crackers and sardines. Like it's a little boy's lunch, so it's like a Lunchable. They bring a Lunchable. Those were great when I was a kid. Not so excited about them anymore. We might think that Jesus would then instead, he'd go, okay, that's cute. Watch what I can do. Boom, and he lays out this lavish buffet with all of these different things. He is the creator of everything. He has turned water into wine. He could do it, and yet he feeds the people with what the disciples bring, this little boy's lunch. God is committed. Sometimes it's a mystery, but he's committed to working through his people. So he calls Abraham a long time ago and makes his covenant. Through Jesus, he establishes his church, and he's just constantly saying, like, yeah, I'm doing this stuff, but I'm going to work through you, my people. And if he is committed to not just always just like miraculously sending a heavenly host of angels to come in and just bypass all us annoying little people to get the important stuff done, if he's committed to working through us, then he may just choose to work through what he's already given us. So it's important to keep in mind that God works through what we have. But remember, in verse 42, we don't have the verse on here, but verse 42, it says, they all ate and were satisfied. So we may work through what we have, but what God provided from those humble supplies of the disciples was not just adequate, it was satisfying. So he took that Lunchable and he made it something that met the need and was satisfying. Number 2, God can multiply resources. And this is really that incredible miracle that happens here, this multiplication. This small provision fed over 5,000 people. And the Gospels don't explain how this happened. There is not some scientific explanation. There's not even really a theological explanation. Jesus breaks the bread, they start passing it out, everybody's fed and satisfied. God can multiply even if we don't know or understand why or how it's done. When the need is great and your resources are small, don't underestimate God's power to multiply. And then 3, God can provide in abundance. The crowds were satisfied, and then 12 basketfuls were gathered. And yes, there is theological significance in the 12 baskets But before we even get there, the crowd was satisfied, and there were leftovers. Jesus didn't just meet the need, he surpassed it. "Test me in this," says the Lord Almighty in Malachi 3:10, "and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it." In Luke 6:38, it speaks of God's blessing as a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. Think about that picture, just overflowing. It's easy to think of this idea about being resourceful in the context of scarcity. Typically how we think of it. But when working with the resources of Jesus, we are working with the God of abundance. So we're going to go into a time of communion now. And just as Jesus, he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, says he looked up to heaven, he gave thanks, and he broke the loaves. He's going to do that again, some chapters later, with his disciples. He's going to take the loaf, he's going to give thanks, and he's going to break it. And just as all the crowds were satisfied, Jesus is going to satisfy the hungry belly of sin and darkness and brokenness, and he's going to defeat it. As he shares this meal with his disciples, as he sets the stage for what is to come, and he invites them, why don't you go ahead and join with me now as he took the bread. I think they had an easier time with this. Took the bread and he broke it, and he said, "This is my body." I'm going to pause for a second to make sure everybody. Thank you, Kat. And he said, "This is my body broken for you." Let's take the bread. And then he shared the cup and he said, this is my blood shed for you. Let's take the cup. Let's pray. Jesus, we thank you for guiding us and teaching us. I think often we maybe follow in the steps of your disciples, at least I know I do sometimes, watching you and maybe a little slow to learn the lesson, but you patiently guide and teach and continue to reveal to us more of your way, continue to surprise us with your love and your provision, and you continue to invite us into being a part of that. Thank you for what you've set ahead of us as one church and for the days to come. Help us to see your hand of provision and of multiplication and of abundance at work as we walk forward with excitement, as we maybe tackle some challenges, and as we grow more and more in your likeness, sharing your blessing with the world around us. We pray this in your name. Amen.